Welcome to the Journey 8. I'm Reverend Judy Hosner, and I invite you to sit back and spend a few moments with us as we share some music and dialogue with you. Oh, yes. Okay. And Ryan, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. This is now officially my first forever co-host. I have wrangled him in, and he may not ever leave. Right? Was that
God
the contract?
Willing.
Okay, well, we're going to move forward with our opening song, which is Blowing in the Wind with Peter, Paul, and Mary, because this is Martin Luther King's anniversary day.
Brother Martin was walking with me, and every step I heard liberty. Though he's fallen, come a million behind. Glory, hallelujah, gonna make it this time. No easy walk to freedom. No easy walk to freedom.
We pulled a fast one on you. we couldn't get the files to work on Blowing in the Wind, which is a song, as I mentioned, written by Bob Dylan. So I don't know, maybe he just waved a magic wand or something. But we did my second favorite song, which is No Easy Walk to Freedom. And I'm going to fast forward to the year 2017, move us out of the civil rights movement, and say we struggle and we continue to walk until the ears of the country finally hear, especially in this day and age. That's all I'm going to say about that. We watched it with the civil rights movement, the people who died for this cause. We've watched it with the women's movement, where we were finally noticed for who we are and what we have accomplished. And of course, now we are walking many a mile in quiet protest for the LGBTQ movement. All of these hysterical. I took too much cough medicine. Are we having fun yet? I think we're having just
fun.
Quit. All of these historical protests were founded on one principle, equality. So goes the seriousness of that statement. It hasn't been an easy walk, but walking for freedom never is. So there you go. Doggone it, I wanted to be so serious. Huh?
You wanted to be serious?
Yeah. See, I can't be serious even when I want to be.
Well, 1 minute is about good enough, and then we can get to the fun stuff.
Yeah, so if I may try to bring us one more time into being serious, I did find, and I know, Ryan, you're too young to remember the civil rights movement, and I don't know if you've ever heard any of Dr. Martin Luther King's speeches. He was amazing. Very powerful speaker. Many of the people out there in radio land have not. His I Have a Dream speech is rather long. It's like 20 minutes long. But the key part of that speech is about 10 minutes long. And I have it. I was going to play it on the show, but I'm not. However, you can email me at revjudy@minister.com, and I'd be glad to send it. It's MP3, so pretty much anybody can play it on anything. And it's powerful. If you need to be uplifted about I Have a Dream, well, that is what you want to hear. So tonight we're switching gears a little bit, And instead of interviewing Judy Foxworth, who we were scheduled to do, we are, we're just going to ride these horses until the time is up. Just me and my partner here, Mr. Wright.
You're going to ride off into the sunset?
Yes. And since we're not going to tackle the open and affirming issues per se, I did interview Judy Sunday, and for whatever reason, I cannot, and this is like the fourth time I've tried to do a remote recording using my iPad, my new iPad Pro, and I got gibberish. I'm hitting a button wrong somewhere, and I suppose if I read the directions, it might help, and I might do that. So we're going to have to redo her interview, and we'll play it later. So, Mr. Ryan, what shall we talk about?
Well, we can certainly talk about civil rights. It was very much on my mind today in Denver, which is where I'm out of. We have a marade that we do every year, and I didn't know what a marade was at first, but it's a cross between a march and a parade, and thus the term a marade. So it's very on my mind today, really. And it is a long march to freedom. And that's why I keep trying to insert humor into our discussion, because you can't have a long march being drab and fighting all the time. You have to see the joy and the humor of it, or you won't be able to make it.
Yes, that's right. I was only, 11 or 12 years old in 1963, and I remember distinctly, though, when the civil rights people were crossing that bridge, walking across that bridge, if you looked at their faces, you saw joy. Yeah, they were laughing, they were singing, they were anything but drab, you know. Even when they were being drug off to jail, they were still singing. And to this day, I remember that. You know, it's like, not that I ever was drug off to jail, mind you. Wink, wink. but, you know, the whole sense of it is, like you said, when it's a long walk, it can be a very long walk if things get out of hand.
That's right. And that's why you need help. Either divine help or friends, or but you need help. The long walk isn't meant to be walked alone.
Yes, that's true. And Dr. King knew that, and was always reaching out, you know, and always saying, listen, this is a walk for my fellow white men as much as it is for the Negro. And it was amazing and sad that a life like that had to end too early. But then, you know, there were several in that that time frame that lost their lives. So tonight, I thought one of the things we could talk about is today and what we do for the purposes of our marches, which is for equality. And how is it different today to march for freedom than it was in the 60s? You know, do we feel the same passion, I wonder?
I think it's the threat that's different. I think we've gotten so used to a certain level of civil rights that we're not necessarily fighting for the same thing. And it doesn't always feel like we're fighting for our survival. So I think now we're starting to feel that. So I think in the next couple months, the next couple years, it will feel very much the same as it did in the 50s. That's my prediction. But right now, mm-hmm. we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, it's a fear of mine. But we're going to go backwards instead of forwards. And I think from a spiritual point, we have to get our prayer warriors praying, get those guardian angels and so forth, because the last thing I want to see in this country, and I'm hoping that this is the last thing most Americans want to see, is that we have lost ground in the civil rights area. And civil rights is not just black, white. I'm talking about across the board. People on the fringes are going to be first attacked, I guess we could say, and the marginalized. I think they're the easy targets right now. And so we have to raise them up and make sure that we are holding hands together, especially in this next couple months and couple years. Well, I don't know what's on the horizon. I don't have my crystal ball today. But I can tell you from my end, there's a lot of fear.
And on my end as well, you can feel it.
I think
a lot of the people in the circles that I'm in have been kind of numb the last couple of weeks. But come inauguration evening, it's going to be a different attitude, because we're already starting to see some of the things that our new president wants to do. And it isn't pleasant, and it's not going to be. And if we thought that he might do good and might start on the right foot, I think we're going to be proven that that's a mistake.
Yeah.
So I think people that I know are getting ready to fight. They've been afraid for a while, and they've been beaten down, and they're scared. But I think that in the last month, people have been gathering their strength, and it'll be curious to see what people do with that strength.
Yeah, and I encourage everyone out there listening that we need not to resort to violence. That is not the Christian way. We need to remember how Jesus handled oppression. And we need to remember that although we might be angry, sad, or whatever the feelings are, we need each other. Don't be afraid. Don't go hiding again. I refuse to go back in the closet. And I refuse to have anyone tell me I'm less than. And hopefully I'll do it in a Christian manner and will not get drug off to jail.
I think, as we were talking about protesting and marching, that's one of the things that's missing in this day and age as well. We really tend to march from a very secular perspective, and we don't bring God or Jesus into our struggles. And I think that's a mistake.
Yes, absolutely. And some of it I have to blame on the way that we communicate nowadays. It's easy now to protest from your couch in your living room by pushing some buttons, and what I'm saying is make sure whatever you say is based on the principles of Christ. And remember that equality is something that you have to work for. It is not given to you. Even if you're born a white person, you still have to fight, especially those of us in the LGBT Q, and I don't remember the other initials.
You could just say plus.
Yes, there we go, Q plus. A movement. You know, we have to not be afraid that God is walking next to us. Don't hide. And forever don't let someone convince you that you're less than, you know? So.
And of that.
Yeah. So those.
And that's the thing that worries me. Is that people may fall into despair and hopelessness and give up before the fight really begins. And.
Yes.
That's really one of the reasons why we need the church. So often progressive Christians are so apologetic that they're not in the public space. You know, when I grew up, I didn't even realize there was such a thing as a progressive Christian. I just knew that there were Christians, and they all stood for the same thing in my mind, and they're all very judgmental, hateful people, which is why for a long time I was not a Christian. And progressives have lost that battle. And so I think a lot of progressive Christians don't have a voice, at least in the public square. And we need to reclaim that, because we fight for what we believe in based on our interpretation of the scripture and how we understand the nature of God to be. And I think that if people heard our message more, they would have more strength to fight for injustice.
Well, and I'm hoping that we can chip a little bit off of the ice cube, shall we say, by using the power of the radio, power of the internet, to reach people and say, don't let it happen again. Don't go back there, and don't be afraid. Fear not, for I am with you. And so, you know, those kinds of statements from the scriptures are what give me the courage. Not that I'm a big courageous person, but they give me the courage to say no. And there'll come a time in this country real soon that we will have to say no. And no is a complete sentence.
It sure is. You know, sometimes the strongest messages are the simplest ones. The no is a really powerful message.
And we Christians, I don't know, is that proper English? We Christians.
It's common English, so we'll go with it.
Huh?
It's common English. So we'll
it's
go
common
with it.
English. And I'm as common as they come. We Christians down here in the South want to say that we have to stand together. Whether we look at each other and say, I don't agree with every part of your progressive religion or whatever, we still are Christians, and our basic, most basic twine that holds us together is that of Christ. And I don't want to walk in marches where I don't have the ability to say he's the reason there will be peace on earth, but we have to fight for it, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I had some music transferred over, but I'm not sure what went through and what didn't go through. So everyone, if you'll turn your ears off for a minute while I ask Mr. Engineer what we really have on file. Because I'm not good at sending things over the internet sometimes. Let's grab Gathering of Spirits. It's one of my favorite songs, y'all. And it's by Alison Krauss.
Oh,
let it go, my love, my truest. Let it sail on silver wings. A life's a twinkling, that's for certain, but it's such a fine thing. There's a gathering of spirits, there's a festival of friends, and we'll take up where we left off. We all meet again. I can't explain it, I couldn't if I tried. How the only things we carry are the things we hold inside.
I love that song.
It's so, I don't know, so Southern, so me, whatever, I love it. It gives me that visual, you know, concept of, you know, things are not done when they're done down here, you know, done is not done kind of thing.
Yeah, there's something reassuring about that. There's something very reassuring about that.
Yes. And here's the thing. If we don't have hope, we won't survive. You know?
Yep.
You got to hang on to something. And, you know, I will tell you from experience, a beer bottle is not what you hang on to for hope.
No, because it gets empty.
Yes. Fast. So, you know, one of the things, trying to get back on track here. One of the things I wanted us to talk about tonight is, number one, to once again introduce you as the co-host, and so people will hear your voice all the time now. And I wanted you to spend a few minutes and talk about your experience in Denver, Colorado, on being in seminary, seeing things, you know, whirling around your head, and how does that work, Ryan? I mean, how do you? It's been so many years since I was in seminary. At least you don't have to write on chalkboards. You have paper and pencil.
Yes, and we have the internet, and we have computers that we can type on. It's like magic.
Yes.
And we can listen to online lectures that are on the computer in the comfort of our home. Yeah,
I know.
It's lovely.
I'm jealous.
I think they may expect more of us now because we have so much more technology. So we really have a lot of reading to do, a lot of assimilating information, as well as our own spiritual formation and working. And so it's very, very busy. You know, so to talk about my experience at seminary, I must, of course, talk about my school, which is Iliff School of Theology, which is the progressive Methodist school, even though I am not a Methodist, because they do all the coursework that you need for if you're a Unitarian or a United Church of Christ like I am. So I can still go here and do everything I need to do to go through the ordination process. So although we're Methodist affiliated, we have a lot more different people here. And we're also incredibly inclusive, which is very much in alignment with my own theology. We have Buddhists who are in the program. We've got Wiccans. We've got atheists, secular humanists. We've got a lot of Mormons. And so we're incredibly eclectic. And I find that incredibly helpful as we move into a period where there are so many people that don't really hold to any denomination or even any spiritual background. You know, you may have people that are going to worship with me, say, at a United Church of Christ congregation, but their theology is rooted in Buddhism, and there's a place for them in our progressive church. Or you might have somebody who's Wiccan or even questioning and not really sure about the whole God thing at all. And as a minister, you need to be able to talk to those people.
Yes.
And that's one thing that I feel like I'm learning to do here, and I enjoy that very much because I am one of those people. I wasn't born and raised in the church, So I don't have just a very clear and simple religious trajectory. It's very complicated. And I bring all of my past religious searching with me and all the things that I learned, even if it's from a different tradition.
Right.
So even though I consider myself a Christian, I'm also fluent in different spiritual languages. And I can understand the experience of Buddhists and people that do yoga and paganism and all of that, because that was part of me, and it's still part of me today. So, you know, the term Christian, I think, for me is very limiting. And I think when I use that word, people have an understanding of who I am as a person that is incomplete. So I tend not to use it, which is very problematic, because then, well, what am I? If I'm somebody seeking ordination in a Christian church but don't like the Christian label, then what do I use? And what does that mean?
You're spiritual.
Yes. So, before I was baptized, which was, I guess, about 8 years ago, I was very much spiritual but not religious. I had been a practicing Wiccan. I had done yoga for many years, so I was well-versed in Hinduism and Sikhism, which is where my guru came from, out of the Sikh tradition. Often people think that yoga is Hindu. It isn't. It's its own separate spiritual practice that isn't related to any one religion. So I'm versed in those different kinds of things. And I'm, you know, the divine feminine, which is very much part of paganism, is still very much part of me. I still, for example, believe in reincarnation. And how do you reconcile that with Christianity? But mm-hmm. I do. And I think I had talked about this before, and I mention it again, because it brings to the point that we're blended people. We have, in this day and age, so many spiritual choices. And so often we're introduced to a whole bunch of different spiritual traditions, and so we take bits and pieces, either consciously or not, of those things that are beneficial to us. And I think most of our spirituality is really a patchwork of different. So it's really unwise to put people in labels, because most people don't fall into that very neatly.
Yeah. It interests me that you said that there's atheists going to your seminary. It's like, why would an atheist want to go and learn about God?
Well, so that's a good question. And part of that is because ILF is a school of theology, not a seminary. So we have a large MDiv program, which is people seeking ordination. And most of them are Christian, but not all of them are. I know a few people that are interfaith in their approach, and they're getting ordained in other ways. I know one woman who's really Hindu in her outlook, and wants to be ordained to do chaplaincy. So, yeah, so that happens. And I actually know a woman who's a pagan who's getting ordained so that she can work as a chaplain, I think one of the very first pagan chaplains in the military.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, everything's blending. Everything's blending. And nothing's cut and dry.
But the only thing that scares me as, let's say, old school, is that how much blending happens to where we lose focus on, shall I say, the root or the basis of theology, you know, not so much theology, but it concerns me in a way that we become so blended that we forget what the true following or the true reason for being ordained. And ordination has always traditionally had a certain connotation of Christianity, of not being a Christian, but Christianity, the belief of, you know, the belief that what happens in the Bible, story by story, is for our interpretation, but the end product is that there is a God. And, a power, I call it a power, a spirit, whatever, that, created us. And it's hard for me to think of an atheist, a person that doesn't believe in God, trying to mesh in. I guess I'm just kind of old.
Oh, well, most of the atheists are not part of the MDiv program. They're not seeking ordination. They're in different programs. So we've got the academic programs, the Master of Arts in Theology. For instance, I had a friend who is getting ready to go to law school and get her graduate degree in that, but she wanted to go to ILF first to learn Christian language. So she spent 2 years at ILF learning about God as an atheist, because a lot of the legal work she wants to do is around church and state, and around issues around abortion in particular and women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to understand where Christians were coming from legally as they were attacking those rights. So it's really kind of clever on her part. So she's looking at trying to learn Christian language and understand Christian theology in many ways so that she can combat it, or at least the evil parts of it that she finds that are destructive.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not necessarily seeking ordination per se.
Okay.
But they're trying to do other things with it. And we have a strong social justice program, so a lot of people are looking at spiritual ways to work in the social justice field and still be spiritual.
Okay. That makes sense. And I thank you for that, sir.
You're welcome. There's a lot going on at ILF and in Denver at large.
It's so funny, and I'm going to do the comparison of the school of theology that I went to, which you know which one that is, and compared to the way you describe ILF. I mean, light years away from each other. And even if I were to go back to my home school today, I think I would still find a fairly conservative approach. I doubt if there would be Buddhists and all these people converging on my school. And in some ways, that makes me sad, because you have the perfect soil to grow in. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so you get fed by many different, different ideas, different theologies, and you're not so narrow-minded as some of us from the old school that were punched out like cookie, cutters. Luckily, there were those of us who were aggressive enough to study on our own, but, I wish there were more schools like ILF, especially today.
We need it today in particular, and I think that a lot of theological schools are very behind the times, because they still are doing that cookie cutter thing that you described, where they're trying to create ministers that preach this specific thing, that believe this specific thing, so that they can go out and do ministry that create more people that are just like that, fitting into the mold. But that's not what drives people into the church anymore, which is why often ministers are called irrelevant, why the church is seen as not being relevant, because they're not involved in day-to-day life, and they're talking about all this abstract stuff that's up in heaven and all of this stuff that doesn't have anything to do with the world, the real world, and applying spirituality in the earth today, and so they don't have any use for it, and they don't speak of a theology that they're familiar with.
And
so
you know,
doesn't have any use for them.
I think that's what I love about life's journey. is that we're not like that. You know, we're trying desperately to become the community church and to reach out and to take in. And, of course, you know, Phil has a tremendous capability of communicating. And social justice, of course, is a real hot topic with us, you know, and with our pastor. It's encouraging to be part of a open and affirming church that really practices what open and affirming is supposed to be and is successful at it. And one of the things I see happening with the new people that are coming into our church is that they're realizing that we're not structured in a sense of, you know, everything has to be done like this and the acolyte has to do this. And I mean, you know, we have the young people that, you know, are acolytes and stuff, and they know they have to light the candle and stuff. But I like the fact that it's more family oriented, because I think that's where you're going to reach people, is to reach right. them on their ground, not yours.
That's right. I mean, I think for me, my role as a minister is to encourage people and teach people how to think and how to look at Scripture to make their own interpretation. It's not for me to say this is what the Bible
right.
says.
And those are the type of ministers that we need so desperately. I've tried for several years now, and I think I get through to people fairly well, because I present the issue, shall we say. I give some facts from my side of it, and then I say, I need you to spend some time praying about this and figure out what's right for you, and then let's come back and talk again. Because a lot of times people see church as a brainwashing, kind of mind-melding experience. And they come out of church and it's like, hey, honey, what did they talk about? I'm not sure what the preacher was talking about. And I was like, why did you spend an hour sitting down in a place where you're not sure what the person said to you? You know, I don't know about you. When I go into a movie and it's a terrible movie, I get up and leave.
Yeah, I'm not one of those people. I think it's rude. I don't want to interrupt other people. And I keep thinking, well, if I watch it long enough, it'll start to make sense. So I might sit through a whole sermon per se, maybe, but I may not come back for another one.
Yeah, and that's sad, and that's what's happening in so many churches. They get that first chance, and you only get one chance nail a person, shall we say. Or, you know, you only have one chance to be that open and affirming church, to be that host, you know, to welcome them and to make them feel like they belong. If you fail at that in the very first run, you will not see them again. And, you know, I strongly believe that. And I'm happy that our church strongly believes that and tries to do the best we can to make people feel that they are just important as the next guy sitting next to them. You know?
Yeah.
So one of the things I wanted to do before we have to close is I did want to go ahead and play the I Have a Dream, which is about 5 minutes long, song from a young man called Mandela Dunamis. This is a powerful song, and since we didn't play the actual speech, I really want to play the song. This song is, if you haven't heard it yet, I've played it a couple times before, If you haven't heard it yet, this is an awesome song. It's called I Have a Dream by Mr. Mandela Dunamis.
I have a dream. I have a dream. I have a dream. That one day, I have a dream. I have a dream. I have a dream. I have a dream that one day my generation will find a way out of drugs, violence, poverty, and hate, and rise up to be something true, remarkable, and great. I have a dream that will be emulated like examples. No longer.
Powerful, powerful song. I Have a Dream by Mandela Dunamis. And that's going to bring us up pretty much to the end of the show. Ryan, I want to thank you so much. I hope your introductory show was as exciting for you as it was for me.
I was thrilled, and I'm really glad that we have this opportunity to work together.
Yes, and I apologize that I didn't have the music all squared away. My godson was here today, and I'll leave it that I'll blame him for everything. He turned 5 years old. He's turning 5 years old on Wednesday, and so he was here to play with the dogs, and so the house will never be the same. So I'm going to sign off with Ryan, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening.
Yes. Thank you so much for spending time with us this evening. Please come back again. And remember, be kind in all you do, and the kindness will come back to you. Grace and peace, Reverend Judy Hosner.